The Oregon legislature convenes for real next Monday. Yes, legislators and the governor took their oaths a few weeks ago, but the current calendar calls for the real work to begin in February. And there's been lots of advance work ahead of that. The major duty of the odd-numbered year sessions of the Oregon legislature is to prepare a budget for the next two-year budget cycle, starting July 1st. The co-chairs of the Joint Ways and Means Committee, one from the House, one from the Senate, published a legislative budget plan 2 weeks ago. Ashland Representative Peter Buckley is the House chair and our guest to talk about the budget and the session ahead. Representative Buckley, welcome back to The Exchange.
Thanks for having me on, Jeffrey.
I'm always curious about how the duties are divided up between you and Senator Richard Devlin. How do you divide the tasks of being co-chairs of Joint Ways and Means?
Well, we've been working together for 4 years, so we developed, I think, a pretty good system. We both have particular areas of the budget that we have particular passions on, but we both have a general understanding of all the areas of the budget, so we kind of do a little bit of back and forth. Richard is wonderful to work with. He's got like an encyclopedia mind, so when we go through different budgets with the budget analysts from you know, on the education budget or the healthcare budget, his memory is just remarkable. He can come back like 3 weeks later and say, wait a second, I remember that this agency is making this expenditure for this purpose, and we need to look at that in comparison to this other agency with a similar purpose. Just a great guy to work with in that regard. And we both share a passion for education. I think both of us got into the legislature hoping that we could start to reinvest in education. Both of us have been put in position on the budget to do something about it, and that's what we're doing.
We'll get into the specifics of education in just a few moments here, but just in terms of general procedure, I know the governor's budget was out, it seemed like late last year, and the budget from the co-chairs out 2 weeks ago. Is this unusually early for a co-chair's budget?
It is. The earliest that anything's come out previously was our last session, 2013. That was the third week of March. But the way I've kind of explained this to my colleagues and others is that when you're developing the budget and working with the budget, it's never done. You're always rebalancing. And if there's a general agreement in the direction you want to go in, there's no need to wait for a specific date, particularly if you've been working together for a number of years, as we have. And Richard was part of the process even before he was co-chair. He was part of the process. So we've been building in this direction to build out of the recession and reinvest in education. So we took advantage of an opportunity that we had, given our working relationship, to get the framework out early, with the understanding that there's a long way to go. We have two revenue forecasts still to come, one in February and one in May, and that will change the parameters of the budget. We also have a potential kicker looking at us. So we thought it was essential to get out a framework that emphasizes education, kind of puts some markers down, and then as the revenue forecasts come in, we'll adjust to those revenue forecasts. If the kicker should happen, we'll have to adjust to that as well. It gives our subcommittee members ample opportunity to really dig into agency budgets. In a sense, we're buying another couple months of work for our subcommittees to be able to go deeper into budgets and try to find the ways to get the best budgets possible in every area.
So you get to a level of detail, rather, it's more of a scalpel than a meat axe approach in a sense. And
correct.
I don't mean to imply that there's cutting necessarily going on, but just that you can take a finer focus.
Absolutely. And we've been able to find, I mean, you know, the process coming out of the recession has been a relentless effort to find ways to hold down costs. And I'm working with some remarkable people. You know, Senator Bates, working on the health care side of things, has helped design the coordinated care organization delivery of health care, which is proving to have slowed down the increase in health care costs significantly. In public safety, we've got remarkable people working in that area as well that have found the way to push dollars into mental health programs, diversion programs, drug and alcohol programs that have allowed us to step off the path of building another prison. We were scheduled to build another prison in Junction City this decade. Now we're not going to be building that prison. We're putting that money into better community-based programs that have a better chance of changing lives, and we're also being able to squeeze a bit more money into education. But I don't know if you had a chance to read the narrative on the framework, but we're trying to be very clear that we're building out of the recession. We're starting to reinvest in education, but right now there's no path that we can see after working on the budget for many years that Oregon's going to have a game-changing investment in education unless there's revenue reform as well. So that's a message we're trying to get out to our colleagues and to the state as a whole.
I did get a chance to read the narrative. In fact, I have chunks of it in front of me, and there's a link to it on our website, so anybody can read this. We are talking to State Representative Peter Buckley, Democrat from Ashland, and co-chair of the Joint Ways and Means Committee in the Oregon Legislature about the coming legislative session and the preparation of the budget. You can take part in this process with us, 800-838-3760, anywhere in the listening area, 800-838-3760, or by email jx@jeffnet.org. So the last budget was identified as the turning point budget. Did it pretty much do about what you expected it to do? And
it
granted,
did.
We're not done with it yet.
It did. Our huge emphasis in the last budget was to try to get the K-12 system back to a point where it's moving forward again. As you're painfully aware, everyone is, that when the recession hit, we dropped so quickly, and school districts were laying off teachers, they were cutting programs, they were cutting school days. And in our last budget, our priority was to stop that, to halt that slide and turn it around and start building back again. And it was extremely difficult, Jeffrey. If you remember from the last session, we had not only the public safety reforms, which were very controversial and then end up playing out in the campaign world, too, as well with the attack ads over the reforms that we did. But there was also the issue of PERS and trying to stabilize the public employee retirement system in a way that did not massively increase costs on school districts, which contribute to that downward spiral. So in this last budget, in the turning point budget, we did find the way to put a little bit over $1 billion more into K-12. We halted that slide. We were also able to make some arrangements in higher ed to freeze tuition for community colleges and universities, which is essential for on the affordability issue for students and families, trying to turn that around as well. And we've also invested in early childhood health care and education at a higher level than we ever have before, again, trying to get to the root causes of some of the struggles that kids have going into the system. If they're not prepared when they get to kindergarten, they're going to struggle throughout unless we get them some additional attention. In this current budget, this proposal we're making now, we are going to add full-day kindergarten statewide, so that's a good advancement for the state. So I do think we've turned the corner, but the overall message that we're saying, we've turned the corner, but if Oregon, if all of us really want a significant change in the prospects for our families and for education in the state, we have to make some changes.
Changes in the way that money comes into the state?
Correct. I mean, right now, I mean, the fact that we're wrestling with the kicker is problematic.
Here's a chance to talk about the kicker, because basically it's an educated guess by the state economist, and if the state economist misses by more than 2%, in other words, revenue comes in more than 2% over projection, the money gets sent back to voters?
That's correct.
Taxpayers, I should say.
Back to taxpayers. And most of it goes to higher income taxpayers, and you just have to look at that and say, is that really the best thing for the state? Should we be sending out close to $300 million, most to high-income taxpayers, or should those dollars be going into education and to building up the reserve fund? If you notice in the budget narrative, we talk very clearly about where we are with our reserves and the fact that when the next economic downturn hits, there's a strong likelihood we will not have built up the reserve high enough, because we have, every time we start to have an economic rebound, the kicker kicks the dollars back out, mostly to higher income taxpayers.
Well, and it looks like what you're, when I looked at the line items at the end, it looked like what you're talking about is about a 1% devotion to a rainy day fund here?
Correct. And, you know, so that will build, and that's, we created the rainy day fund in 2007 when my caucus got into the majority in the Oregon House. It's the first thing we did was create a rainy day fund. We did have an education stability fund passed by the voters previously, but there was no general rainy day fund to help the entire budget. We established that in 2007. We were able to put about $330 million into it, which at the time seemed like a pretty remarkable achievement, but in the crash of 2008-2009, that $300 million just disappeared quickly. We're on a pace now that we can build up to about $1.2 billion over the next 4 years, but we need to get much higher than that. We need to get up closer to 10 to 15% of the budget in reserves in order to make sure we can get through an economic downturn such as we've experienced in the past.
So just by the numbers, and we haven't actually talked about these directly yet, the proposed general fund lottery fund budget, which is the one where most of the current services come from, $18.5 billion proposed for the coming biennium, $16.75 billion, let's say, for the biennium that we're in right now, which amounts to, this is still, what, 10% bigger than last year?
It is.
Last time?
It is. And so, you know, so like I said, the economy is improving, and it's a huge relief to be able to talk about it and talk about reinvesting now. So we are putting, of that 10%, we're putting 1% into the rainy day fund, which means we have an overall increase of about 9%. I don't want to talk too many numbers and percentages because it's early in the morning and people's eyes will glaze over on budget talk. But I do think it's important to at least explain what we're trying to accomplish. We do have this increase thanks to the recovering economy, and we're investing in education. I'm going to throw a few more percentages out. K-12 will get the 9% increase, and that will include the addition of full-day kindergarten statewide, which is a really good step forward. Community colleges will get about a 15% increase in funding, and universities about a 22% increase in funding, because all along, for the last 4 years at least, Senator Devlin and I have been working very hard to try to move all of education forward, and community colleges and higher ed have been the last to get resources in, obviously because tuition also plays in, and tuition increases have happened on students to help carry the load. We're trying to, again, reverse that trend and move back to a point where the state is investing more in higher education. So we feel very positive about that, but we'd like to do a lot more.
I can just about guarantee, though, that anybody who looks at the raw numbers says, well, this budget is 10% bigger than last time around, and that's faster than the rate of inflation growth.
Right.
So
absolutely. Absolutely. You know, 5%, you know, it's 5% a year for 2 years, and it's it is good growth. It's solid growth. But you also have to remember these percentages I'm throwing around for community colleges and universities. By making a increase of this magnitude, we're just getting community colleges back to where they were in 2007. And we're not quite there yet with our universities back to where they were in 2007 before the crash. K-12 is back to where it was before. But that's really what we're doing. We're basically restoring the state to where we were prior to the recession. And again, our message is we believe we can restore to where we were prior to the recession. We believe we can stabilize this. But we can't both stabilize it and significantly increase the investment in education unless we're willing to look at how revenue comes in. And for just one example, we are the fourth lowest corporate tax state in the country. And I think we have to look at that and say, do we have to remain the fourth lowest corporate tax state and the 43rd or 44th lowest education investment state? I think we need to adjust there. I do believe there'll be measures brought forward to the 2016 ballot for voters to decide the direction for the state of Oregon. Do we want to find a way to invest more or not? I think it's time to call that question and actually find the way to invest more and really make a breakthrough. I have great confidence in the educators in our state. I have great confidence in the families and students of our state. Given the resources and the ability to function, I think we'll thrive.
State Representative Peter Buckley of Ashland is our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. He is the House co-chair of the Joint Ways and Means Committee in the Oregon Legislature, therefore central to the budget writing process, and that's what we're talking about here. The legislature gets down to work next Monday. You can join us on the Jefferson Exchange at 800-838-3760, 800-838-3760, or by email jx@jeffnet.org. Well, if we're the fourth lowest corporate tax state in the country, why is the reputation getting around, or at least scattered around, certainly from industry, that this is an expensive place to do business?
I think we're a high-income tax state, and I think the folks who are CEOs, they feel the pinch on that because we are a high-income tax state, and we have a high capital gains tax as well. I think both of those, plus if you add our land use laws, which make it a more of a puzzle of how to, you have to solve that puzzle if you are going to expand your business or locate in a particular area. So like any state, we have a lot of challenges to resolve as you enter into business or expand businesses here. But the corporate tax rate is very low. So I think that part of the discussion right now is on a gross receipts tax that other states have, that if Oregon's gross receipts tax on very large corporations, those that have over $25 million in Oregon sales, if we adjusted that tax even slightly, the revenue from that would be very, very significant and could go into the education sector.
We have an email here from Shoshana, I suspect from Ashland. She says, how about that sales tax again? Even a 1% tax would make a difference, especially with some help from revenue from people coming into Oregon to buy cars and other high-priced items because they save the big sales tax they'd pay in their states.
Well, you know, I think I told the story before about the checker at Safeway who had his idea on the sales tax that it would be a sales tax, but if you had an Oregon driver's license or ID card, you wouldn't have to pay it. Which I thought was pretty funny. The sales tax idea has been brought up so many times, and we pull it, we do the test groups on it, and it can never get over 50% support. Even if we tie it directly to education, if we tie it directly to a rainy day fund, whatever idea we've come out with to try to interest voters, the reaction has been no. Oregon voters have been very clear they like not having the sales tax. So that's why it gets brought up, but it keeps getting pushed back down because we just can't see the path of it passing. It would have to pass on the ballot. I think any major revenue change is going to have to pass on the ballot, and that one just pulls horribly every time we take it out.
Randolph in Pleasant Hill is on the line. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Oregon State Representative Peter Buckley.
Yeah, I heard you're saying you give 22% to higher education, but I was wondering, hasn't higher education gone privatized somewhat, like, and so therefore the state would be giving less money to, say, the University of Oregon? And then also property tax people, like developers, I've noticed in Oregon, get away with huge amounts of owing money to the state, where people like my wife, who's a special education teacher, the state comes after her for back taxes, but people like a developer right here in Lane County, the McDougall brothers, or people like that, they get away scot-free with owing like millions of dollars to the state, and I'd like to know how that works as well.
All right, thanks, Randolph. Appreciate it. The first part, the university system hasn't privatized, but the universities are now more independent from each other.
That is correct. Yeah, they're still public universities. They do each have an institutional board. Part of the argument, particularly around the U of O, was that by going to an institutional board, U of O's financial backers would be more inclined to give their resources to the university. And they've, of course, announced a very large multi-billion-dollar fundraising campaign. So the state's percentage of the U of O budget will continue to decrease as the U of O's funders put more private dollars in. And that is a concern. That's one reason that we want to make sure there's a faculty member and a student member and a staff member on each one of the institutional boards to be watchdogs to make sure that the public interest is still taken into account as the university develops the independent boards. So that is a concern. So far, though, I have to say it's working better than I feared it would. The universities are actually cooperating more than they did previous to having independent boards. It seems counterintuitive, but that is what's happening. They're working on the shared services in a very productive way. They are dealing with policy issues in a very collaborative way. So I'm impressed so far with how it's working, but it is something we have to guide. On the second question, we did, in fact, Representative Paul Holvey of Eugene was instrumental in developing the interagency compliance network to try to go after the back taxes of developers who are kind of trying to slip through the cracks. If they get it, for instance, a state contract from one agency and it doesn't work out, you know, is the information shared with agencies so that the Department of Revenue can go after them, et cetera? So there are steps being made, and we take it very seriously. The compliance issues are being taken very seriously. We've increased the staff of the Department of Revenue in order to try to make sure that people pay the taxes that they owe. It's the fair thing to do.
Just on a general approach in education, I mean, when push comes to shove and you're thinking about, well, okay, which end of K-12 outside of the K-12 boundaries do we go for? Is it likely you'll put much more money into early childhood education, pre-K stuff, because you get a more effectiveness for each dollar spent? Or do you want to put stuff to community colleges? Or do you end up sprinkling a little bit in each area?
Well, in our budget, I think you would say we've increased it across the board. The governor is working with us. We're trying to get more into the early childhood area. Early childhood gets, and I'll throw another percentage, early childhood gets an 18% increase in this budget. So it gets a little bit more in community colleges in terms of an increase, more than K-12, but not quite as much as universities in terms of a percentage increase. But still, the number of kids we're trying to reach in pre-K is substantial. So the governor's got some proposals we're working on with him. We're trying to get more money into pre-K. Obviously, the effort to get kids so they're reading by third grade is essential. But the point that I've tried to make continuously is that you can't ignore any part of the education system. That every part of it is important. The graduation rates are out today, and you probably saw that in the news. And
I did.
They're not anywhere near where we need them to be. So we can't simply say to the high schools, "Oh, now we're going to take more money away from you, deplete your ability to have the programs that your students thrive on, and push it all down, push more of it down to pre-K." We can't. We're trying not to injure any student in the system. We're trying to give every student in the system a path, a reasonable path for progress with the investments that we make.
I'm sure there were some huzzas about the fact that some districts are at 75% graduation rate, but we're shooting for ultimately 100%.
Correct.
So how do we get to the 40-40-20 plan, and does it happen within this budget?
Well, I think keep your eyes on what's going to happen here in Southern Oregon. It was mentioned in the Medford paper today about the Medford School District and the other districts working together on a model that really was kind of shown to us by McCall, Texas. And you should have Scott Perry of the local ESD on your show sometime to talk about this. I think it's a new way of approaching graduation rates, a new way to approach moving students through, giving a connection to something that's really meaningful to them all the way through their high school career on into post-secondary education.
We snuck the music in a little early there by accident, so we have actually a minute left here. So ultimately, do you feel like, I think you've pretty well characterized this already, that it's not going to fix everything by any stretch of the imagination, but it looks like it's a good-feeling budget anyway.
It's a step forward. It's definitely a step forward, and I think our state should be proud of how we've all held together, and everyone's worked tremendously hard to move the whole state forward. So we're making a step forward. I think that my colleagues and I won't want us to go much, much further. Poverty is way too prevalent in our state still. And our kids need the same sort of opportunities that we had growing up, Jeffrey, and that's what I'm dedicated to bringing about.
Yeah, we didn't even talk about the human resources part of the budget. It's actually a fairly short narrative, about 18 pages, available online, and there is a link to it at our website with the information about this particular segment. State Representative Peter Buckley of Ashland, co-chair of the Joint Ways and Means Committee, thanks so much for joining us today.
Thanks for having me, Jeffrey.
You bet.